We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's Rich Cellini.
Welcome to the Bear in Mind podcast. I'm your host, Rich Cellini. We'll have three guests this week on Bear in Mind. First, head coach Charmin Smith and the Cal women's team off to a great start at 5-1. One of her star players, Lelani McIntosh, will join us as well. And finally, Kirk Everest, men's water polo coach. Bears going for another national championship in water polo, looking for back-to-back titles. So those will be our three guests. Up first, a woman who likes to play off the bounce, who's got her team at 5-1. Coach Smith, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Always glad to be here and looking forward to chatting with you a little bit.
When you got the season rolling before you even played a game, what did you think you had with your team?
I thought I had a much improved team, a deeper team, a better team than last year, which is what we want. So excited about that.
Wow. One of your quotes that, you know, struck me was the ball game at St. Mary's. You win 69-66. Great effort by the women. But one of your post-game quotes, you said, you know, this is a game that we didn't used to win. And you have to learn how to win these games with a little bit of grit and a little bit of toughness. Can that come from coaching, or does that piece of the puzzle, which is a really important one for a team, kind of come from within, and the women need to figure that out on their own as you go through the fire?
I'd say it's both. I noticed a change in myself in that game. And I guess you could say maybe it's a little bit of what comes first, the chicken or the egg. But in that entire game, I was never worried that we weren't going to win. And there are seasons before in that type of situation where I'm like, oh my God, are we going to really, like, we're going to let this happen, you know? And so my mind has shifted, my mindset in that moment, which I noticed, and I was like, this is great. Like, I'm confident, and we're down 8 in the fourth. that felt good. And then for our players to be able to execute and to not hang their head, and for them to also know, like, we're good, like, stay with it, and to make the plays that we needed to make. I don't know if they were feeding off of me, you know, or if I was feeding off of what they were giving me, but I was extremely confident and we were able to get it done.
When you have moments like that in your past experience, Does it feel like teams just never turn back from that? That once we've done it, we're like, we know we're good. And there'll be losses along the way. There always are. And there'll be disappointments over the course of a long season. That's just part of it. But do you feel like that's a really key piece of a component to build as a team, to be like, now we have that in our bag of tricks and we know that this is who we are as a program and a team?
Oh, for sure. I think that was a huge step for our program to be able to fight through and get that win. I think we have a lot more steps to take, though, right? You know, thinking back to the Notre Dame game, we cut the lead to three there. We cut their lead to three, and we couldn't get over the hump there against the number nine team in the country. So, you know, we've had wins against ranked opponents, but I want to see that happen. Not in the games where you're supposed to win. The next step is getting over that hump in the games where you're the underdog. And that's the next piece of learning how to be a winner, learning how to be a champion.
How was that experience for you and for the women in the Shamrock Classic playing Notre Dame, a top 10 team? You play them in St. Louis. It's the first game, women's basketball game ever broadcast on NBC. I mean, that's always little cool pieces of the puzzle. How was that experience as a whole for you, aside from the outcome?
Yeah, I think it was really amazing. Just like, I didn't really know how I would feel prior to being in St. Louis, but being there and you know, having my mom walk into the high school gym while we're practicing and friends and other family members and having my team be able to witness this and see my high school. We went to the Boys and Girls Club and, you know, our Bears, they're just like electric. Like they just start, you know, interacting with the youth that was there, and they start having like a rap session and they're freestyling and, you know, the Notre Dame players were just like sitting, signing autographs. And I was like, we're different, you know, like we're just like, we engage in a different way that is really special and really meaningful. And I really appreciate that about the young women on this team. And as for the game, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, you guys did so well. Oh, you look so good. And to be honest, I didn't think we played well at all. I think we played extremely hard, and I think we competed. Had we played well, I think we would have gotten the W. So, you know, we're still working to get better every single day, and there's a lot more potential that we're trying to meet as we go on with the season.
Are you good at enjoying those moments? You know, you talk about when your mom walks in and you go to your high school. A lot of coaches aren't. I mean, you know that, coach. A lot of coaches are so focused on the here and now and the next that it's only until, you know, on my side, when you work in broadcasting, that they retire, that they kind of look back at enjoying that. And they're like, you know, I should have enjoyed those moments while they were there and not tried to, you know, enjoy them all when I was in my 70s. Are you good at enjoying the moment?
I think I did a decent job coming home. I think I did okay with that. It felt really good. I really enjoyed the game. Even, you know, I was frustrated at times, thought we could have played better, but just to see us fighting and competing, you love that as a coach. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. There was a great crowd there, obviously being the first game on NBC. You know, that was something really special, and I could feel the energy from that.
Did your mom say anything to you that was fun for you to hear?
You know, both my mom and dad just said they're really proud of me. And it means a lot because, you know, as a young kid, I thought, you know, doctor, lawyer, engineer, you know, majored in engineering. Like, that's what I was supposed to do. Like, neither of my parents went to college. And like, I was going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. And engineering stuck with me all the way through graduate school. But this basketball thing never let go of me, you know. So being a head coach didn't sound as sexy. And, you know, it didn't sound as impressive, but to see the look of pride, you know, on my parents' faces and all of the family members that were there and are just so proud to see me leading this group of young women. And it's helped me to understand that this is an impressive thing and something really important and meaningful, the position that I have as the head coach at Cal.
Well, you're still engineering, coach. It's just a different kind of engineering. You don't get to use raw materials. Well, I guess it's raw materials, but how about raw materials with feelings and energy and enthusiasm and disappointments,
exactly.
Which is always fun. Now, we're going to have Leilani McIntosh on the podcast, bear in mind as well. We're visiting with head coach Charmin Smith right now. Tell me a little bit about how Leilani's been. She's been there a long time. How's she doing so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, Leilani's been, you know, the heart and soul of this team. She means so much to us and to me in particular, you know, even just how she came to Cal. I got the job, beginning of June in 2019, I believe. And then we found Leilani in July. You know, it was a very late sign. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, she's been commanding this team and leading this team as our point guard for all of this time. She's just a phenomenal human being. And then to watch how her game has developed since her freshman year, you know, she thought she was going to Pepperdine, and then she's battling in the Pac-12 against the Ari McDonalds and, you know, Kiana Williams of the world. And she stepped up to be one of the point guards and one of the best point guards in this conference, and improving her offense every single year from a scoring perspective. And you're seeing that right now with how she's knocking down the 3-point shot and attacking to the rim so well. I'm just really proud of her development.
She also has some neat pieces that she's working off the court. I had, you know, pieces sent to me about her designing the, doing the custom work on the Air Force Ones. I mean, maybe we're not supposed to talk about that because it's not a Nike school, but has she done any custom work on any shoes for you, Coach?
You know, I haven't been able to put in an order yet because of what you mentioned, you know, but I know that she's really busy with that. She has a very creative mind. She does some video work for our athletics department. You know, she's a double major in legal studies and sociology. Like, she's just extremely impressive, and both on and off the court.
Coming up next, Coach, now, first of all, congratulations on the work down in Los Angeles. Nice work getting wins on the road. Winning on the road, that's a tough thing to do. Regardless of where you go, regardless of the level of competition, winning on the road is always another piece. I always think of coaches and the team trying to put pieces of the puzzle together. And you put another nice piece of the puzzle together last weekend down in Los Angeles. Tell me your thoughts on how that went for you.
Yeah, I was happy that we got the W. Wasn't that happy with how we played. You know, as I mentioned, like, we need to get better. And I told our team after the Montana game, you know, I don't want to be a negative Nancy and, you know, be down on you guys when we got two W's, because that was the goal. The goal was, this is a business trip. This isn't about the turkey. This is a business trip. We handled our business. And I said, but I also need you to allow me to be honest with you and to tell you this isn't good enough. And, you know, it wasn't good enough for who we are trying to be, who we're competing against. And so I think we'll have a huge test moving forward. I think that's where you're headed this weekend in our Raising the Bar Invitational, you know, with some great teams in that. And we've got to keep stepping up and improving. We can't stay where we are. We have a lot more growth to do.
Well, you're one step ahead of me. You beat me off the dribble on Raising the Bar right there, Coach, which is not that hard to do, but good work. Arkansas Pine Bluff, Gardner Webb, SMU. It's the Raising the BAR Invitational. It's your brainchild. It's the second year. Tell us about what this is and what it means to you.
Yeah, so following all the, you know, unrest that came from the murder of George Floyd and everything that happened that summer, there were a lot of things that people were doing. And then I noticed a shift when we all kind of went back to work and started getting back to our normal routines. And I thought that there was a decrease in the focus on social justice in particular. And I didn't want this to just go away as if we've solved the problems just because we get to return to work. And so our tournament was a great opportunity to have a space in which we can continue the conversations surrounding social justice, and in particular, the representation of Black women in women's basketball. And so the Raising the Bar Invitational is with the bar standing for basketball, activism, and representation. And so we will highlight four Black female head coaches in this tournament and each year. Super excited about the coaches we have this year. And in doing that, we also try to point out what they've done in their communities to help with social justice and the efforts that they've made surrounding that. So really good tournament. We're looking for, you know, more sponsorship, more people to be involved with this and help us to raise awareness and continue the conversation surrounding social justice.
And the Bears are going to play Saturday at 11 against Arkansas Pine Bluff, and then Sunday at 1 against SMU. So come on out to Haas Pavilion and cheer on Coach Sharman Smith and the Bears. That's great. And, you know, along those lines, Coach, I was, you know, reading up before chatting with you that Last year in the NCAA tournament, there were 12 women head coaches that were African-American. So numbers, not, I don't think where they should be, but better. And you know, the neat part of what you, Don Staley, and so many others are doing, especially in this tournament, is, you know, creating something for young women who are Black that can see that, you know, maybe I can be this. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, Coach Staley's line was, you can't dream it until you can see it. And now that you can see it, and so, you know what, we're happy you're not a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer. It's exactly. Better that you're on the sideline of applying the trade of basketball. So those are some great pieces. Well, Coach, let's see. Anything else you want to add? Because I have one last question, unless you want to add and try to get more people to come out to your Raising the Bar Invitational. You going to do any other special pieces during the tournament for folks that come out?
Yeah, there's some extra pieces that we're working on right now that I can't mention just in case they don't come through, but it's going to be a great event to be a part of. And, you know, you mentioned the 12 Black coaches in the NCAA tournament. You know, Black females represent only 17 to 18% of the head coaches in our sport. Yet we represent the student athletes are over 40% Black females. So, you know, yeah, we've had a lot of successful Black coaches that are in the tournament. I hope to be one of those very shortly, right?
We all hope for that, Coach.
Yeah. But, you know, that representation still isn't there. And there's no reason for it, especially when you point out how successful Black coaches have been in our sport.
Well, Coach, it's going to be a great tournament. We look forward to it. But before we let you run, tell me about Ghost. I hear that you've got a dog, Ghost. What's the breed? It's a couple years old. It's like the team mascot. Give me the scoop on that. I was very intrigued when I got this little tidbit of information about Ghost.
Yeah, Ghost is a special dude. I wish he were here with me today. He's usually right here, but he's with his dog walker on Tuesdays. He is a Bernedoodle, so Bernese Mountain Dog and Poodle. Weighs in at about 85 pounds, thinks he's a lap dog, is the most gentle giant you've ever been around, and haven't met a person that doesn't love Ghost. Jada Curry, who isn't really that fond of dogs, at first she was like, oh, get away. And now she's like, oh, hey, Ghost, come here, and giving him hugs and jumping on him like he's a horse.
Coach, you've got an 85-pound lap dog. I love it. Well, yep. We can't wait to see Ghost and the rest of you. Good luck the rest of the way. Can't wait to celebrate with you when you make the NCAA tournament and continued success. And great luck with the Raising the Bar Invitational, and we always appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Bears head coach, Sharman Smith. We're back with more of the Bear in Mind podcast. Welcome back to the Bear in Mind podcast. Guest number two, Leilani McIntosh, women's basketball player, a senior from Phoenix to Berkeley to 4 years past with a double major in your hip pocket. Leilani, first of all, welcome. Thanks for coming on the Bear in Mind podcast.
Thanks for having me.
How'd you get to Berkeley?
How'd I get to Berkeley?
Don't tell me you drove either.
I was actually committed to Pepperdine really late. I had a coaching change that was like 2 days before I even was about to go for like summer workouts at Pepperdine. And I still ended up going down there, but then I had like a decision where do I take the chance on this new coach, this whole new system at Pepperdine, or do I decommit and see what else is out there? And it was difficult for me just because like I didn't want to decommit. And one, I was like not very highly recruited coming out of high school. So it was big on academics for me, which is a big reason why I chose Pepperdine. But then I had a strong relationship with Delisha Millen-Jones, which was the head coach at the time. Something was telling me to decommit. I don't know if it was just like my gut feeling, but I did. And as soon as I did, Cal swooped me up and here I am.
What sold you to come play for Coach Smith?
Actually, one of my teammates at the time, she just transferred this past year, but I used to basically live at her house all summer because I played club ball in SoCal. I'm from Arizona, so it was just like that transferring back and forth and stuff. And I would basically stay at her house all summer and we would just play club ball together. So that was my best friend. She committed to Cal and I knew that not knowing much, like because I wasn't recruited, like just knowing that she wouldn't put herself in a position for failure. So like, I kind of like went off that.
Well, it sure has worked out. You have two majors. What are the two majors?
Sociology and legal studies.
Wow. Well, we're going to talk basketball first, then we're going to circle back to those two. And we're going to figure out what you're going to do with them. 4 years, well, three plus right now, have gone by. I imagine it's gone by quickly. Congratulations. Really solid start to the season. You're 5-1. Tell me about your feelings on the current team that you're on. How far can this team go?
Yeah, I'm really excited with this team. I think in the past, we've had like a lot of inexperience. I think the record shows like we were getting our butts kicked left and right. And I think that we needed it. We needed that experience. And I think with this year, we've had some transfers leave, some transfers come in. And I think with the transfers that came in, like we talk about veteran leadership from Peanut and Kemri, Claudia and her shooting ability coming from SF. And like we take these pieces and it's no longer like needing experience. Like we have that experience and now it's about bringing that collective together. And I think a lot of this past season, we relied a lot on Jada Curry. Jada Curry's still going to do what she does, but now she has some help. And I think that's what's been missing for us.
Yeah. Sometimes when you have a great player like Jada, regardless of the sport, everybody kind of turns and just watches and lets the great player do their thing. And the team never ends up being as good as it can be. It's like everybody has to contribute. And then, like you said it perfectly, Jada can be Jada, but we need
Jada
to make sure that
we
can do our piece of the puzzle. Tell me what your mindset is on how you run a team, because that's your job, to be the floor general and make sure that everything hums along. And Jada gets her, but everybody else gets theirs as well.
Yeah, I think my main like focus and like how I pride myself on leadership is like lead by example. And I'm not like one of those people that likes to bring the whole group together and like talk things out. Like I'm more of like getting to know people individually and their personality and building that relationship and like knowing how I can talk to people differently. And I think that just comes like, again, with like my experience of the game. So very soft spoken, but leading by example, I think, is something that I just have to put effort into. And like, that doesn't take much, out of me. That's kind of where I'm at with leading and helping everybody get what they need.
Well, even for those of us, for people who haven't gone out to watch you play in person, and they need to, come out to the Raising the Bar Invitational coming up this weekend. We'll talk
more
about that.
Come out this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that in a second. One of the key things, you don't have to look down the list too far. When you see somebody's on an all-defensive team, one thing you know for a fact is that they play hard, because defense is all about what?
Effort,
That's it. And you know what? The shots come and go, right? And some days they fall more than others, but defense is all about, if you're going to make a determination to come out and play defensively, effort-wise, who taught you how to steal the ball? You're a thief of epic proportions on the floor. Who taught you how to do that?
I don't know if anyone specifically has taught me how to do that. I think I enjoy like the hype that it gets afterwards, and just how it like kind of deflates the other team a little bit. Or I can get in the head of my opponent a little bit. They're like, oh snap, now she's on me again, and like that rowdiness kind of helps my team a little bit more. So I think I kind of thrive off that.
Were you always good at taking the ball away?
I think my trainer back home that I started training with coming into college, he's a football trainer, and he trains my brother. And I think his ability to work on like my explosiveness and my just stability and agility and all that, like I'm doing kind of like football training stuff. And I think that kind of like helped me kind of gain that more confidence that yes, I can lunge at you and still recover, like that type of that training that I've done.
There are a lot of players in basketball who think they can steal the ball and they just end up fouling. What's the key to getting the ball away without committing a foul?
You want me to tell my secrets on
you? No, you don't have to tell your secrets. I don't want to give anybody any advantages who listen to the Bear in Mind podcast. We're talking with Leilani McIntosh, the senior guard Do you have anything? You don't have to give away your secrets, but
I think
you're like, because it's different. You know what it is. You watch somebody who can take the ball away from somebody, and you watch the other 95% who just run into people and foul. You're like,
I think it's all about timing.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Watching the dribble, and like, you kind of like start to see like, when you're doing scout defense, like how with their tendencies and stuff, like, okay, we had somebody this past game that we knew did two dribbles and then got into our pull-up. Like, it's like just knowing like people's tendencies and then trying to like break that down. Like, okay, I know she's about to cross here, meet her where she's about to cross, and then get into that. So
nice. How did you choose your two majors, and why did you choose two majors? Aren't you busy enough with one major at Cal and playing Division I basketball? Who comes up with the idea to take two majors down?
I'm very busy, actually. But I think just like, because I went to a college preparatory school in high school, I came in with my freshman year already done.
Okay.
So like the time for me to declare for a major came up really fast. I didn't really have time to like experience everything that I wanted to. At the time, I took many sociology classes, and I was very interested in like human development and how like we've came over time, like as society. So I majored in that, and then I was because I majored in one, I would be able to just graduate in three. I kind of wanted to expand my time a little bit here, and taking classes on the side, in legal studies. I'm also like into like the murder mystery shows and like figuring out like how these cases like develop and like getting into the minds of people, like criminals and stuff. So I think that's where that love for like legal studies had came in. So then ended up double majoring in legal studies. And yeah, that's where we're at.
Good for you. That's outstanding. Oh, you also do a number of things in your free time, from working in the athletic department to also, you're somewhat of a shoe designer. I saw some videos sent over my way. Where did you get this talent to decorate other people's shoes? And when do I get in line? Coach said she didn't even have a pair.
She doesn't have a pair.
You're going to have to fix that at some point, aren't you?
I know. I will. I think with the shoes, it was a COVID thing. I'm not like the best like drawer or whatever, like artist. I just like making like stencils or like painting in that way. And I think it was just like a COVID thing where I was just bored. So I like ordered some shoes and started painting it myself. And then my friends and other family members like started asking for some. So that's kind of where I'm at. People think that I should make a Instagram for it or like a social media for it. But then I, again, will have to feel like I dedicate all of my time to that.
And tell them, maybe you keep it in your hip pocket for now. Knock down those double majors. Lead the Bears to the NCAA tournament. We're making you even busier right now. And then when you're done with all that playing basketball, wherever that ends up, then we can get back to putting the shoes and other pieces on Instagram. I don't think you need any more to do right now.
Right. So I'm taking orders. But it's just like you have to understand that I'm busy and it might not be as high demand as you need it to be.
Yeah, no, you're getting backburnered right now. Talk about the Raising the Bar Invitational you have coming up. That's a really neat event coaches put together.
Yeah, raising the bar. I think it started, when did it start?
Second year.
Was that? Yeah, my second year, huh? Yeah, it started, and I think I love how Charmin is putting it together, like Black head coaches getting that representation and us being able to come together and just represent in the tournament. I don't think that there's many of them that get that opportunity to do so. And I think it's just it's a great event because we also get to play teams that we don't necessarily always get the chance to play, which gives them exposure as well. And it's just really just a fun event, and we usually have a good time. The family comes, and everyone should come this weekend.
Yes, the Bears are playing what, Arkansas Pine Bluff Saturday at 11, and then Sunday at 1, the SMU Mustangs.
Yes.
So come on out. And you know what Coach is telling me about your ball game back at Notre Dame is how well, not just you, but the entire team interacts with young kids. And it's just a really warm, fun, inviting group. And I've had the pleasure to watch you when you play the doubleheaders, when the men play next. And it's just, it's fun to watch you. It's fun to watch you play on the floor, but then it's fun to watch you interact with everybody and how warm and welcoming. And is that something that's talked about as a team, or is that just who you, all of you women are naturally?
I think just naturally. I don't think we've ever had to like really talk about it. A lot of us play for the younger generation, and being able to represent just women's basketball in general. And like, these kids don't care if you win or lose, like they're here regardless. And I think regardless if we win or lose, we still have to be that role model that they think and believe we are. And I think after the Notre Dame game was amazing because there were so many kids just lined up, just yelling from all sides, can we get a picture, an autograph? And like, I'm coming around. Like, it's just like, it was just really fun to like be able to have that experience and get to see them and get to know them a little bit more.
Yeah. Neat memories made and a lot more to go. Best of luck the rest of the way with your senior season. Bears at 5-1. With more W's coming down the pike. Leilani, keep up the great work, not only in the classroom, but on the floor as well. And we appreciate you taking the time here to join the Bear in Mind podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Anytime. Go Bears.
Go Bears.
All right, we're back with more of the Bear in Mind podcast.
Welcome back to the Bear in Mind podcast. Third and final guest of the podcast this week, Kirk Everest, head coach of men's water polo, gunning for another national championship, looking back to back. And Coach, welcome to the Bear in Mind podcast. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Coach, looking for back to back championships. First of all, we're going to drum up a little excitement and support for people to get out to the Speaker Aquatics Complex and watch the highest level of men's water polo in the country. But how do you go about earning the right to host the tournament right off the bat?
Yeah, I mean, they send out, the NC2A sends out bids a few years in advance. So we felt like we had a pretty good crew coming back in a few years. So we kind of put it out there as a way to be at home during the event. It's a lot of work for our staff and everybody, but it'll be nice when we're kind of in friendly confines. You know, there'll be a lot of fans from different teams, but at least we know the way to the pool.
It's fun. And if people haven't been out there to watch, you know, it's water polo on this or a swim meet, any of those pieces, it's a great spot. I mean, it's fun. It's intimate. You're in there. It's loud. It is a fun place to be with a ton of energy inside there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, it's one of those places that's seen a lot of great water polo games. And as you said, swim meets and athletes over the years. So I think everybody enjoys playing games here at Speaker, and we're looking forward to the weekend.
You know what else is pretty cool when you cheer for the blue and gold is how great you guys have been through the years. Now, Coach, I'm not going to pretend that I'm a water polo expert. We could spend our 15 minutes here together just going over your personal accolades. Are you kidding me? And then your teams and the rest of it. Where did you get started in water polo and why? I mean, you might get elected into the Hall of Fame again after your coaching career is done. What got you started in it?
You know, it's kind of a weird little story. I grew up in Orinda. And I was a baseball player, and tennis were kind of my two major sports. And I hit high school or the summer before high school, and I was kind of trying to make the decision as to what I was going to do because baseball and tennis were in the same
season. Right, in spring sports, sure.
So yeah. I was kind of looking down the barrel of, okay, I got to choose here eventually. And I was going to play basketball, you know, in the 80s, you just kind of went from season to season.
Sure.
And although I love football, I think the best athlete in my grade all through, you know, from third, fourth, fifth grade was going to be the quarterback of the football team. So I just never really, I love football, but I was like, not going to do it because I can't beat that kid out. And then my friends explained to me that if I didn't do a sport in the fall, I had to do PE. And I'm like, oh no, that's not happening. So I had to figure it out. So it was football or water polo. And I swam a little bit and my buddies were all gonna go play water polo. So they've been trying to talk me into doing it for a while. And I'm like, all right, I'll do it.
This is hysterical, Coach, especially in the day and age now. Now you mentioned the 80s, you'd go, you know, football, basketball, baseball, the traditional ones. So you're just blowing holes into the idea that you have to specialize in a sport when you're 9 years old and commit to it and stay with it, because you hop in the pool just to get out of PE in high school. And not only do you do well in the pool, you end up, you're the player of the year in the NCAA, you're a three-time All-American, you end up in the Hall of Fame. When did water polo click for you? Like, you got in there, you swam a little bit. I mean, because this is a brutal sport. Anybody who doesn't understand it or has never watched it, like, this is like any other sport you'd ever play, except you're in the water. So now you have a chance to drown on top of it. And these guys are taking you and they're pulling you under. It is unbelievable to watch. I have no idea how anybody ever gets a shot off, how they ever score a goal. I mean, I'd be the guy sitting on the ledge holding on for dear life, just hoping to get out of the pool. When did you get good at it?
Yeah. Again, you know, it was a kind of a mix. I liked basketball. The physicality was fun.
Yeah.
Like I said, my first coach said, you'd be pretty good at this sport if you ever learned how to swim. Like, if you were good at swimming. I wasn't very fast. And so that was kind of the deal. I had to choose again, and I'm still thinking I'm going to play tennis or baseball. And then I kind of liked it in the fall. So I decided I'd swim that year for the high school swim team. And really for the first time, like, you know, if you grow up in Orinda, everybody swims.
Sure.
You have all these rec swim meets, but it was pretty loosey-goosey, and I was never really great at it. And so I went out for the high school swim team, was on JV, but I worked hard. And then all of a sudden, I started to figure it out. Like, I went from whatever. I think I was a 205, 200 freestyler as a freshman. And then I went to 155 as a sophomore, and I went to 145 as a junior. I went to 141 as a senior. Nort actually asked me to go out for the swim team when I finished high school. And so I swam here at Cal for 2 years for Nort while I played water polo as well. So somewhere in that, you know, middle of my high school career, I figured out how like swimming worked. And then just kind of all those other sports kind of melded into, you know, how do you know, you knew how to throw a ball because you played baseball, tennis. There were some things about shooting and balance and angles and stuff that I think I learned from tennis. The spacing of the game and movement and, you know, moving with and without the ball is all basketball, kind of.
Sure.
And you just kind of stole all these things that I learned from other sports and kind of put it into water polo and figured it out.
Now, the next thing you got to tell me is that you had a whole nother life with another job and that you never wanted to coach and you ended up becoming a Hall of Fame caliber coach. But seriously, did you always want to coach, or was that in the plan when you got it, or did you fall into that one too?
You know, I started coaching in 1990, I think, back at Miramonte. And I was on the national team, and we would have the fall, kind of that September, whenever our last summer event was on the national team.
Right.
We'd have the fall kind of off just to train on your own, but we weren't doing anything as a team. And so I started coaching back at Miramonte with Bill Brown, the coach that had been there forever. And he was my coach in high school. And again, a lot of it was so I could get keys to the pool and I would have access to it whenever I wanted. And I could go and I could grab the goalie from the team and say, you're coming in on a Saturday, or you're going to show up 30 minutes early so I can train. And then I'd work out with the guys and then I'd coach. And I really just kind of started to really like it. But I was working for a software company in Orinda. It was a tiny little software company started by a former Cal athlete, Peter Jackson. His sons played baseball and went on to, you know, major leagues and great family. But I was working there. When I finished with the national team, so I kind of worked, I coached from 90 to 96, stopped playing polo, Olympic level, started working for Peter in 96. But I wanted to keep coaching because I really liked it and I was in sales. So he just told me, if you hit your number, I don't care where you are at 3:30 on a September afternoon. If you don't hit your number, you're not going to have a job. So, you know, you go figure that out. So I kept doing it. The job came open here at Cal in 2002. I was on the committee to find a new coach. And a couple of the people on the committee kind of talked me out of being on the committee and to go apply for the job myself. And that's kind of how it started. So a little bit of falling into it as well.
And then a couple decades have passed. You got a handful of national championships, your national champs last year, looking to try to repeat again this year. What did you think you had in your team before you even hopped in the pool and started competing this year?
Yeah, it was an experienced team. We lost a few players, key players from last year's team, but we had the core of our group coming back a lot. Most of our offense came back, and we got a guy like Papa in the middle as our center. That allows us to do a lot of things. He's such a dynamic player. You know, we returned Jack Dealey, a local kid from San Ramon, and Max Casabella, Roberto Valera, who were huge pieces of our championship last year. We picked up some young kids, you know, and then we've got, again, a lot of returning guys, Garrett Dunn, Jake Stone, Joe Molina, guys that just were big pieces of our team, and they were all coming back. So we figured we had a good squad, but, you know, a lot can happen. Adrian Weinberg, our goalie's coming back. And so, you know, we felt like we had a good team. But in our sport, it's a bunch of one goal games. No matter how good you are, you know, we're going to meet quality on a weekly basis, and we run it into SC and UCLA and Stanford and UOP, Long Beach, Davis. You know, these are all teams that gave us really, really solid games, and we knew that we'd be into one and two goal games all year, and we'd have to kind of figure those ways to win those games at the end consistently throughout the year.
You mentioned Papa Nicolau. He's the best player in the country, Coach. Coutinho Award winner, All-American on the Pac-12 honor roll. Where did you find him?
Town of 10, we had a couple other Greek kids on the team. And Nikos Deligrammatikos, who one of our graduates from last year's side, had, you know, shown me this kid. They were playing on the junior team together when I was recruiting Nikos. I also saw Papa playing on the same team. And I had kind of asked him, you know, would he be interested in coming over at the beginning? He didn't. He was going to stay there and, you know, figure out how to maybe polo, national team, university systems a little bit different over there because it's not connected. So it's harder. So he had decided not to come over. He was taking a gap year and trying to figure out how he was going to, you know, what teams he was going to play for, how he's going to make it work. And then I think something sparked him that he thought maybe he would think about it. A couple of the guys, Nikos, Vasily Savaris, who was on our team as well, you know, called me over at Christmas break saying he's interested in coming back. And UCLA, I think, had been talking to him a little bit before. And I'm like, you know, this is why you're here. You're supposed to tell me this stuff. So I quickly got on the phone, and I don't think I let him off until he said he was coming to Cal. So it turned out pretty well for us.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, first of all, where'd you find him? And then second of all, how'd you get him? But, you know, find a player that great. Did you know he was going to be what he's become?
I mean, he was a pretty special player. He was a junior world or his age group world championship MVP. So anybody that wins an award like that at a high level of age group water polo, but like, you know, 19 and under water polo world championships, these are great players. A lot of them will go on to be at the Olympics. And he was, you know, he was pretty dynamic then. He does a lot of things. I knew what he could do as a center. He's a complete player. He can play almost every position except for goalie, and he's not left-handed. But other than that, he can do a lot of things. One of our fastest swimmers, and for a guy that big to be that fast, up and down, and athletic and mobile and all of these things is pretty rare. So he just makes an impact all over the pool.
They've already had one match, and then we end up in the quarters. So it's Pacific versus Davis. On then the winner of that ends up playing the Bears on the third, right? And then the other side is USC Princeton, and then the winner of that will take on UCLA. So for the Bears and Bear fans, we're looking at Saturday, Sunday. So you're going to have to end up, you know, everything goes right for you on Saturday, ended up with the back-to-back. But tell me about the field overall and what people can expect, because this is a loaded field, Coach. It's the best of the best when you get down to this final handful of teams.
Yeah, it's wide open. You know, we were down, you know, 4-1 to Davis earlier in the year, so they have the quality to give anybody a run. Princeton beat Stanford in the middle of the season. We played them really early in the season. I don't think they had quite kind of hit form yet. So they're a really quality team. USC's USC. They started off a little slow, but have just started playing better and better and better. And they won our conference tournament, which is no easy feat. And they've got three or four really high level players. And the other players have just kind of caught up and given them a good mix. So they're really tough. And UCLA is just a grind. I mean, we've gone into overtime with them probably 7 or 8 times over the last couple of years. Our last game was a 1-goal game. It didn't go to overtime, but it looked like it would again. And, you know, so they're really tough. And UOP winning the GCC, which is a really tough conference. And again, they gave us a hell of a game earlier in the year, overtime that we won first few weeks of the season. And again, they've got a quality team with some really good international players, 3 or 4 Canadian national team players, and some really good quality all around. So there's no easy outs this weekend. We got to be focused. You know, we get Davis or UOP. We're not as familiar with them as USC or UCLA that we've seen multiple times this year. So that presents a challenge too. So you're trying to prepare for two different teams, little slightly different styles. And we'll have 24 hours to 48 hours to implement the game plans that we're making up right now for whoever we meet. But a lot of it's ourselves, you know. If we play well, we feel comfortable that we have a good chance of winning. And there are things that are the same no matter who we play, right? How do we have to attack certain systems and certain things that we'll see, no matter who we're going to play, it's going to be the same. And if we have the discipline to do those things and we don't panic and we don't get caught up in the moment, sometimes being at home can be a challenge because there's a lot of emotion there. And everybody thinks you're in charge of the venue, you know, how do I get tickets? How do I do this? I'm not in charge. Right. But so you got to get that around the kids. Like, you can't control this stuff, manage it early, manage expectations, and then lock yourselves in for what you have to do. And some, you got to get a little selfish too. You know, you take care of mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, and then back up and let's do our job and we'll see, you know, see where it falls.
Yeah. That's something that no people on the outside would never understand, that just because it's at Cal, it's not a Cal event. It's an NCAA event and they run the entire thing.
Exactly.
From A to Z. So listen, if I need something, I go to the NCAA too. I'm here as a participant. It's our facility, but I'm a participant too. Coach, loved the conversation. Really fun. Best of luck in getting national championship number 5. It's been one of the most enjoyable interviews I've done in a long time. You know what? Coaches who are, you know, a few days away of playing for a national championship are usually pretty uptight. I love your demeanor and your laid back piece. And I'm going to tell our kids that, you know, I just met somebody who's in the Hall of Fame, an Olympian, an All-American, and the only reason he ended up, you know, playing water polo because he didn't want to take PE in high school, Coach. That's an awesome story. It is a great story. Good luck, Coach. And you know what? One other quick piece to promote. So the matches for the Bears are on the 3rd Saturday and the 4th if the Bears come out on top. And you know what? We'll keep our fingers crossed and send good luck on that. And if you can't make it out and the Bears advance, you can also watch it on ESPNU. So a lot of great things going on. But get out there and cheer on the Bears. It's an awesome event. Best of luck, and national championships and the opportunity to play for them are always special.
Oh, fantastic. Go Bears.
Go Bears. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
That'll do it for this edition of Bear in Mind Podcast. I'm Rich Cellini, your host. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the California Golden Bears Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.